Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the debate about peace and prosperity in Europe and globally. And we are now entering the section number 7 about economics and economic reform, a topic very dear to my heart, also professionally, because that's what I do as a profession the last 20 years, discussing economic reform and how to reform transition countries, especially post-communist transition countries, in which we have a lot in Europe and in Central and Eastern Europe after the victory in the Cold War. And obviously that was the big debate, how to really create political governance conditions to win this confrontation with Russia, to help the countries to develop, to unite Europe, to make it possible that membership is feasible. And that's basically what I'm doing professionally also the last 20 years since, or maybe also a bit before, as a student representative, later for this SME union, as it's called, in Brussels, in the framework of the EPP, and also then what I've done as a consultant in the since 2005 in various ministries in Kosovo, in Albania, in Ukraine, and where I try also in my publications, my websites, my videos, my email newsletters, and also now with this podcast to spread the gospel why Europe is like it is and what needs to be done to improve it as well, but also why economic reform is so important and why it is for the people, obviously, for the consumers, for the taxpayers, makes a lot of sense to focus on economic reform and also to understand the beginning of the European Union, understand why the EU, in combination with NATO and all our Western institutions like OECD, is working so well. It's working not perfectly in some aspects, has to be improved, obviously. We have to learn a lot from America, but understand that it's a force of the good and it's very beneficial, the European Union, for the situation as it was, obviously, in the tragic past of Europe, in the destruction of the post-war situation, and also gradually only to develop and also to understand that we have our limitations, obviously, but in all aspects we are a wonderful form of increasing prosperity, not as successful as it is in the United States, and we have to improve, there's no doubt. I will talk about this one as well in this introduction. In this introduction about economics and European Union, but in principle it's a wonderful thing. I would like to mention also that I devote this very much to Mr. Hayek and von Mises. They are the philosophers which are the additionally to the political leaders which have basically made Europe possible, obviously, like Dean Acheson and Jean Monnet and General Marshall and the presidents, Adenauer, obviously, Truman and Eisenhower. And these two economic philosophers have created the basis for the European Union in many aspects. Obviously, always Europe was a bit of a compromise between the people who wanted to somehow reconstruct Europe more with state planning. That's certainly Mr. Jean Monnet. And the economic philosophers of the more liberal direction, like Hayek and Mises. And obviously, we are in this debate still today. And obviously, we have a lot of socialist influence as well. Historically, we are the front line with socialism coming from Russia. And obviously, the battlefields of losing or winning free Europe were in Italy and France and in many other countries in the political systems in the 40s and 50s. And still today the battle is on which kind of level of state intervention, state spending, taxation should be done. But that's in every free society, I think, a very fair debate. And depends on the political support and the political results, who wins that. But what is very important is to understand that all countries benefit very much from EU membership because it's a well-established political and regulatory framework and it matters very much. So I'm very much for EU membership, as I think will be no surprise for any of you who have listened already. So in the economic part, I will talk all in all about 22 sections, And that means I will talk about again the security system and why it matters, which kind of alliance you are in. It matters also economically. I will talk about the currency system, the euro, obviously, that's very important. I will talk about trade and custom system according to the theory and principle of economic, regional economic integration, from free trade areas to customs union to internal markets to monetary union to political unification, where we are at the moment and what steps we have achieved well and what we have to do more. So that I will definitely talk a lot about. And also about how it matters, why it matters to have a working regulatory framework, because it's not so easy to invent such a regulatory framework. And there are not so many in the world who are competing with each other. And so that's very important. And then I will talk also about SMEs, small and medium businesses, small companies, basically. We call them in the EU small and medium enterprises, SME. I will talk a lot about it. So that's an important term. That is also keeping me busy the last 20 years because that's the European economic model. We are not this kind of corporate big supporting the few selected big companies. No, the European economic model is very much based on entrepreneurship, on getting support for small and medium enterprises and make sure they can compete. And the family, then the extensions, the small and medium enterprises, and this kind of broad-based manufacturing and service model, which the European economy is and will be, and is very important also as a legitimacy base for the European economic reforms. It really matters very much. Then I will talk about liberalization and this internal competition between in the various important sectors. That's very important, and I will talk about that one. I will talk about privatization. I will talk about state capture and collusion, where we have major problems in the European Union. I will talk about SME and competition law, how important it is to have strict competition supervision in the European Union and beyond. I will talk about energy, climate, dependency on Russia, reform of the energy sector. I will talk about tax competition and corporate tax. I will talk about income tax, flat taxes, and the reform to have lower taxes in corporation and in income. I will talk about VAT and how beneficial that tax is. I will talk about infrastructure and infrastructure usage and how to regulate it and how important it is to have European level infrastructure initiatives. I will talk about European companies in the infrastructure sector, how important it is to have railways, highways, and energy also at the EIB level to bring reason into the sector. I will talk about digitalization and the transformation during the digitalization. I will talk about anti-corruption and the European efforts on that. I will talk about public services and public administration reform and what needs to be done and how to reform it. I will talk about the land market and the cadastre system, the mortgage system, and the interconnection between all this. I will talk about the labor market and the migration systems. I will and how it's important to be open, well regulated, but open. And I will talk about the EU, OECD, and all the instruments to get all this done. And also about the free trade agreements, the EU agencies, the Southeastern European agencies to regulate this European economic model and also allow other countries to benefit from it. That's, I think, most of the topics I will cover here. Maybe some of the others will be mentioned during the framework of this debate, and maybe I will add some chapters, but more or less, this is what I would like to cover. And I would like also to devote it very much because in America, there are a lot of people who are very critical towards the European Union, obviously. Also, they were highly vocal during the Trump times. And this is all utter nonsense. You know, this is all utter nonsense. And also in Britain, there are some people who accuse the EU for a lot of crazy things. That's also utter nonsense. Obviously, you know, we are not as competitive as the United States overall, but we have very competitive tax systems. We have very competitive countries, yeah, in the European Union. The European Union is a union of 27 countries. We have to see the various different economies, understand them. We certainly have a problem, especially in the southern European economies and also in France. True, that has to be addressed individually, but it's not because of France having high taxes, the whole of the European Union model is not working. It's a typical kind of looking at one country only, which the Americans and the British obviously know best, that's France. And then they say that's the European Union. We are not a big France. France has 67 million people, and also there is a lot of differences. And but we are 450 million people in the European Union, and please take us serious. We are very serious. We are not as rich and successful as the United States of America, and we never were. You know, America was already the richest economy in 1890, yeah? And it has always been the case. We are like together, we make sense. We are about as big as the United States in economic output, close about. Yeah? Man, depends always how you see it, but we are close in about 18 trillions. The Americans are 20 trillions. So per capita, obviously, we are far behind. But we are not a poor continent anymore, but we have been. And always understand where we come from and what kind of political debates we have to win and to have to lead and how our structures are. We are not a frontier economy like the United States. And also the United States won't stay in this way of frontier economy with higher population density. And we need to learn from each other. We have to obviously in some aspects learn very much from the United States. But also the United States can learn significantly in many areas from the European regulatory model. And we have to, in a way, approximate. That's, I think, very beneficial for the United States and from the European Union in many ways, and obviously also the EU to join NATO and to conclude a free trade agreement. You know that already. That's absolutely my strong belief. But in generally, the regulatory alignment is something I think would be very beneficial for both of us and for the free world in general, because there is a lot of good things. I want to close. You know, there's always easy to make the one small regulation about yogurts and about letters and about health and safety. And, you know, it maybe there is a regulatory overreach in the one or the other aspects, but in which country and in which regulatory system there isn't? I don't know any. There can be some bad regulation. Yes, when there's some bad regulation, yes, then let's fix it and make a better regulation. It's not the world is not lost by that. But this is the world in democracies. We have systems, we unite things, we organize things, we discuss it, and then we have common resolutions in the institutions to get it better. But it's the system itself is a free market economy. It's working very well. It works so well. It's unprecedented how much prosperity it has created in the Central and Eastern European countries. And it has also in Southern Europe, when you see in the history of the European continent since the last 75 years, yeah, it was never as successful as it is now. And no single country was ever more successful than it is now. And we have, of course, a setback in 2008, yeah. And some are on this level of 2008 still. That's, of course, not good. Yeah, but it's exactly what I say since 20 years. We have to lower taxes in France, Germany, Italy, and in Spain. But especially in France, Germany, Italy, we have to lower taxes, and in Austria. And we have not done that. And now we are not as competitive with a more competitive world, with a complete open world, where almost everybody now is beside maybe Cuba and North Korea, and but everybody wants to participate in the world economy now. It's no longer the first Cold War, where only 1 billion people were in the free world and 5 billion more or less in the closed world in under socialist or communist systems. No, it's now all the soon 8 billion people Most of them, they are in connected with the world economy. It's a complete new openness which we have achieved, luckily, and complete new prosperity which we have achieved. And we have to adopt some of our member states' ancient, a little bit rusty, dusty economic models. Hello, France, I talk to you. And also Western Germany has to be more competitive. But let's not forget, it's almost, you know, in the maximum efficiency, the German economic model of the post-war American system, new constitution, new currency, and so on and so on. It works really very good. So it will be with lower taxes even enormously much more successful. And that's what I call for. And that's partly is also happening now. At least the solidarity tax is kept for most taxpayers. So I will talk about many of these aspects, about the reforms. I will talk about energy, climate, digitalization, that's anyhow in everybody's effort. And also just to maybe remind you that with the shock of Brexit, we have now, the EU has now concluded a free trade agreement with Japan, a historic breakthrough, with Vietnam, a historic breakthrough, with Singapore, a historic breakthrough, and also has already negotiated and signed, but not, it's not ratified, the free trade agreement with Mercosur, with Brazil and Argentina, and the market of the South, and Paraguay and Uruguay. And that's a major, major achievement. Yeah? That's really historic breakthroughs. They have been only possible with this shock of Brexit. So we also have an agreement now, luckily, with the UK, and we will have much more free trade agreements by 2024. I'm confident about it. And we will also address all these imbalances, problems of high taxation, high state company ownership. That's, you know, that's all in the bigger picture. Obviously, in the 90s and 2000, it was more important to get first the enlargement done and NATO enlargement. You know, now we are in this, maybe we can say some consolidation. Obviously, we have to reorient and fine-tune some of the things which have not been so perfect. Yeah, that we have such a high level of state company corporate ownership in Italy and in Austria, in Romania, in Slovenia. This is not perfect. Yeah. But okay, let's address it. Let's get it done. These are the things we know. These are the things we can do. And then let's avoid to be any kind of French-led third model a la Yugoslavia, some kind of third way between the market economy and socialism. That's totally out of the question. And it's also not happening. Yeah. But you know, some might on the left think that this is the way. No, it's not. We will do a market democracy, European style. We have a higher regulatory density, and it also makes sense. We want, that's a public consensus, we want certain things regulated, clarity, consumers protected, taxpayers protected. I think, actually, I endorse this model, but with a lower tax level and with a lower collusion and corruption level, less dependency on Russian energy, which is so corruptive, less in state ownership of big companies, which is so corruptive for the political systems in Europe, because our prime ministers, especially in Austria, in Italy, Romania, Slovenia, they are in the same time also the owners of a huge kind of corporate behemoth. And obviously, it leads to a lot of jobs and a lot of temptations, and this must end. It's not that the American president or the German chancellor is at the same time also the manager of a huge corporate network. This is not what they should do, and this is not the task of politicians to manage the state corporate collusion network for their own party benefit or partly for their own benefit. Yeah. This is not what we should do and what we should be about. And obviously that makes then a bad reputation. And, you know, there are issues, obviously, in all political systems to be addressed. And we can be more perfect, and we will. We will be a European Union which is on similar prosperity levels like the United States. And this must be the vision. We had some setbacks since 2008 because we are always like slower to recover because we are simply also not as united. We now had the first time this 750 billion new package, which is so necessary in the corona crisis. But we need to be also more united. There must be more fiscal power on the top level, on the European level. There must be more kind of reaction capacity for economic shocks. Because until we get our act together, it always takes quite a lot of time. And then the Americans do it with a snip of the finger. And, you know, then they are, of course, turning around after economic shocks much faster and lose less time. Because shocks are counted, you know, we had over 20 economic shocks in the last 100 years since 1907. You know, when you count the wars and, you know, the post-war slumps and, you know, the whole depressions, recessions, crisis, currency shocks, yeah, and major oil shocks, yeah, it's over 21 different economic shocks. Maybe I will make one own series about that one as well. But we are now in the 20th since the big crisis of 1907, which led to the First World War. And obviously we have also to understand that in this world, there are always external shocks, economic shocks, crises. They are part of the economic and of the political reality. We have to have the capacity to react. And we need a continental union, like the European Union or the United States, to be able to absorb regional shocks, but also to have the funding power pooled on the European level to be able, when there is a oil shock, a corona shock, global financial crisis, a war in Ukraine, or these things, we have to have the capacity to have the united resources to respond accordingly. And we have now, more or less, we are not perfect still. When you compare the American response to corona, obviously much more faster, decisive, united, and up to the challenge than we. But this is an institutional challenge we have to address. But given our tragic past, we have never been as good as we are now. And that we need to get better is absolutely the case. And we need to be more open. We need to be more united. But we also have to go in all the specific economic sectors, from SMEs, understand what America does better, from taxation, from liberalization to privatization, the energy sector, the tech sector, the state to corporate sector, and also the competition sector, the anti-corruption sector, what kind of institutions we need additionally, how can we better regulate a pan-European labor market, a pan-European capital market, a pan-European service market, include Ukraine in all this, make sure that Turkey is so well connected as possible to all these markets, and that this prosperity of these 700 million people which live in free Europe outside of Russia are really lifted to the potential output level. And, you know, with this kind of potential output level also to have a decent living, a decent income, and also the capability to act accordingly to respond to the external shocks, which there are many and will be more in the future, no doubt. They are regularly occurring. And whatever the next shock will be in 2024, or 2026, or 2029, we have to be ready for that and have the institutional framework which our founding fathers, and there are founding fathers of the European Union, from Schuman to Monnet, from Acheson to Hayek, to also Mises and to Adenauer and to the Gasperi and also to Truman and to Eisenhower. I like it's a mix, you know. We are not just a European founding fathers, which some want to explain us, but we have these great economic philosophers, we have these great American presidents, and we have these European leaders, statesmen, and promoters of European unification, which built these institutions. We have to regularly fine-tune them, but we have also to do the economic reform attached to it to make sure that we are a successful contribution to the global economy and open to the world, united in Europe, able to help other regions as well with free trade agreements, with also exporting stability, with allowing also refugees in the European Union when it's necessary, when there is a war, a crisis, yeah, and to be successful together and to manage this next phase of globalization, the next 30 years now until 2050, in an even better way than we have already did last 30 years. The world was at 5.5 billion people. Now it's at 8 billion people. It's 2.5 billion more. It's an enormous success. And it was at 22 trillion in the victory point, and now it's at 86 trillion GDP output. It's almost four times as much as it was in 30 years ago. And we should make sure that we have also four times the GDP in 30 years globally. And to be successful, we will be 10 billion people. We will hopefully have this four times GDP in 2050. And Europe must make an add contribution by improved economic reform, more institutional unity, by enlargement, and by getting our act together and to try to be as successful as North America is already with the help of our North American friends together, and also contribute to global peace, prosperity by getting our enlargements and institutional reforms done. And I think that's now where I want to close. So focus on economics. It's a famous slogan. It's the economy, absolutely. And I would like to call everybody to contribute to economic reforms. See where your country is not perfect now and focus on the reforms of these economic issues I will raise now in this podcast. And I will close now the introduction and then I will start with this 20 single podcasts about economic reform in the coming series. Thanks a lot for your attention.